My guest today began his radio career while he was serving in the Canadian Army over in Europe. Chuck Davis, welcome.
Thanks.
You began while you were in the Army. How did that come about?
Actually, it began maybe about a year or so before I actually got the gig. I was with the 1st Battalion, Princess Patricia's PPCLI in Calgary, and I just bought myself a rather nice tape recorder and a shortwave radio. Nothing in mind, just thought it'd be fun to have stuff like that. The other guys told me that I sounded like an announcer. Now, remember, this is 50 years ago. So I thought, I'm going to play a gag. What we did was to record some music on my tape recorder. Then we put it inside my barrack box, which is like a big trunk, and there was a hole in the side. I stuck the radio on top of it. This is in a room that held, I think there were four of us in a room. When another soldier would walk by, I'd holler out, "Hey, want to buy a radio?" And he'd come in and look at this thing, which is a really nice, like 7 or 8 band shortwave radio. I wanted $20 for it. It was worth $200. I said, "Just listen to this," and I'd pretend to turn it on. One of my cohorts would plug in the tape recorder. Up would come the music, and we'd listen to it for a moment. And then a rather excited announcer, me, came in and said something like, "We interrupt this program for an important bulletin. We have just heard that Russian troops have landed at Churchill, Manitoba, and it was great fun to watch the faces of these guys." I think in the whole afternoon, there was only one guy who twigged. Everybody else thought it was the real thing. One of the guys was a sergeant, and he listened to it. His face went white, and he said, "I've got to get to headquarters," and we had to pull him back to tell him it was a gag. Well, since the other guys had thought I sounded like an announcer, I thought, well, if I can fool them, maybe I can fool the world. So when I got to Germany, I went over there in 1955. They had just started a radio station. They were going to. And they put out a call for auditions. And when the guys found out that if you got a job at the radio station, you didn't have to do drill, you didn't have to do kitchen work, whatever. I think they had something like 600 people applying, people with impenetrable accents and all kinds of. So I went in there and I auditioned and they chose me. Another one of the people at the time was Fred Straw, who had a lot of years in Okanagan radio. He had some experience. So they hired me. The station went on the air March 21, 1956. I was in radio for the next 40 years or so.
What type of equipment did they have over there in Germany for you to work with?
The station was run by the CBC. The manager was CBC. The producer was CBC. The equipment was top of the line for the time. All I remember is the word attenuators. So they had this rather fancy console, and it took me a while to learn how to work it. I was the first announcer on the air on the first full day of broadcasting, March 22, 1956, and I was there for about a year, and I remember at one point, because I'd fallen in love with working at the radio station, that the manager, Jack Crane, went on to become a high-ranking CBC official, came in and said one day, "Davis, go home," because I was spending all my time there. You couldn't pull me away.
So you stayed there for how long, about a year or two?
It was about a year, yeah. Then I came back to Canada, and on my discharge, I thought, well, I'll try to get a job in radio. So the first thing I did was to go to CFRB. Can you imagine a guy with about a year's experience? I don't think they even auditioned me. Oh, but I have to tell you a funny story about being auditioned in Radio Luxembourg. While I was over in Europe, we used to listen to Radio Luxembourg a lot, quite a prestigious station. I went there on one of my leaves to see if I might get a job, which is insanely stupid. These are top line of the stuff. But anyway, they gave me the opportunity to do an audition. I had to describe the room I was in for 60 seconds and then read a bunch of, I don't speak any other language except English, but my ear for German, Italian, Spanish is not bad. And that's, in fact, what they told me at the end of the audition. They said, "Your German is excellent. Your Italian's very good. Your Spanish is pretty good. Your French, not so good. Unfortunately, Mr. Davis, your English is not up to our standards." So when I came back to Canada, as I said, I started looking around for radio work, and I eventually found one with the Thompson chain at Kirkland Lake, CJKL in Kirkland Lake. And odd jobs. I mean, I think I did the afternoon show, sports every now and again. Then they opened a satellite station at a little place called New Liskeard. And I went there, and I was there for a better part of a year. Really enjoyed it. And there, you talk about the variety of jobs you get. Mine included shoveling the snow off the sidewalk in front of the station. And we had a manager named Jess French, a really nice guy. And I enjoyed myself there. This is 56, because that's when Don Larson pitched his perfect game, and I heard that game. We were covering it. From there, I went to CKCR in Kitchener. That was, in some ways, the most fun I've ever had in radio, because the staff was a really strange amalgam of people. We had a dwarf. His name was Dick Austin. He was a jerk. We had a sportscaster who read A.E. Housman poetry, not on the air, but our woman's director was Kay Simons, who went on to become a flight attendant for CP Air and later a junior executive. We had a newscaster named Paul Freeman, who had been shell-shocked in the war, sometimes led to odd behavior. Remember the moment when Khrushchev at the United Nations banged his shoe on the table? Paul, while reading this, took his shoe off and started banging it on the table while reading the item. So it was a really interesting one. There's a guy named Don Haney, black guy, about 6'3". We became good friends. In some ways, as I say, it was maybe the second best radio job I ever had, because the first, the best of them all came later. From that station. Oh, I was in Kingston. That's right. Yeah. They transferred me down there from Kirkland Lake. The day I got there, the whole chain switched to rock and roll. And at the time, I didn't like rock and roll. And I didn't know it either. There was a big hit at the time called Chihuahua. And on the label, it was misspelled, CHA-HUA-HUA. And I looked at this and I thought, oh, that's Chihuahua. And that's how I announced. So I wasn't really very good at the rock and roll thing. I only came to like it later.
The Kingston gig was about a year.
You know, I find now that the older I get, the harder I find it to remember specific years, etc. That sounds about right. And then while I was there, I sent an audition tape to CJVI in Victoria. I got a telegram from the program director, a fellow named Dick Beatty, and it began, I'll always remember this, deliver yourself to CJVI, blah, 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 on such and such a date. I'd never been asked to deliver myself, but I got there, and I enjoyed it. Liked it, liked the city. Took my father with me. He was ailing. He was living in Toronto, but always wanted to come back to BC, although we were both originally from Winnipeg. He's from St. John, New Brunswick, but I was born in Winnipeg. So we found a little apartment, and I used to sometimes be able to walk down CJBI because it was on Fort Street, same as the apartment. And I was there for, again, it's difficult for me to remember how long.
It looks like 3 years.
What happened was that they had a staff thinning out, but they liked my work. They were regretful that I had to leave, and they got me a job at Czech TV. And that was the first time that I had ever been on television. And I was there for however long.
That would be sometime between 60 and 63.
That's right. While I was at TV, another one of the staff was looking through the want ads, because he'd just been fired, and he said, hey, Davis, here's a thing you might be interested in. CBC Vancouver is looking for a staff announcer. And I said, hey, give me that. So I sent them an audition tape, and they hired me. I was absolutely delighted. A little nervous, too, because the CBC, in my eyes, was the epitome of broadcasting. I was a staff announcer for 5 years. After I'd been there for a while, they had a staff thinning. Two announcers had to be shaved off, the two junior announcers. It was me and a guy named Len Chappell, who's actually a familiar name in local broadcasting now. I went up to Prince Rupert and I thought, well, because my experience was with private radio, I thought I'll be up there for 3 or 4 months before I need to come back. And 13 soggy months later, he finally got back to Vancouver, and that's because they opened their FM service.
Who are some of the people you worked with at CJVI? You mentioned Dick Beatty. Can you remember any of the other guys?
Dick Beatty never did any on-air work that I can recall. The morning man at CJVI was John Simon. He was later killed in a car accident in the States. He became a professor at an American university, and one of the funniest dudes I have ever met in my life. I just really loved that guy. Then there was Hugh Curtis. He was there. And that's about all I can remember from that station. Oh, yeah, John Simon. He was a genius at getting you to crack up. He was always trying new things with me. I'm doing the sports one day. I normally didn't do sport, but I think the regular guy was away. And John was sitting behind me in the control room. And every now and again, he'd go, just that. And I steeled myself to not laugh. And then he went, just once. That change cracked me up. I told
people right. Were always trying to break up the other guy.
That's right. Well, in fact, there's one that we dare not talk about. Happened in one of the Ontario stations. But another one of the trick was to set fire to the bottom of the person's script. That's been done before.
And Prince Rupert, when you were there, as you say, your 13 soggy months, Who were some of the people there that you could remember?
The manager was a fellow named Will Hankinson, who had started a language thing. People met every couple of weeks and talked about words, etc. The technical director was a fellow named Clarence Insulander, and you'll react to this. You'll know what I mean. Clarence would come in while you were doing a show and start poking and prodding around on the console while you're on the air, and I'd be standing there looking at him, eyes gaping. What the hell are you doing? You know, we called him Mr. I. He was a really nice guy, but to him, it was just tubes. And there was a guy named Ellen Kangas. A guy who turned into my longest-lasting friend, with the exception of Norm Groman, Merv Meadows, who eventually got into international service with the Canadian Army, Canadian government, I should say. For a time, he was the acting ambassador to Zambia. So he did quite well. He's living in Saanichton now.
Some of your CBC colleagues from those days.
Oh, I remember them all. We had a guy named Greg Barnes. There's an executive named Greg Barnes. This is a different guy. He used to, each year, read A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, take all the parts, and it was just just incredible listening to this guy doing that stuff. Bruno Simulai, who had signed a letter that I still had when I sent an audition tape to CJOR. Bruno was the PD at the time, and he emailed me back. He said, we don't have a position at the moment, but I'm going to keep your, and I will get back to you. Well, I changed by then. We had a guy named John Sharp, Gordon Hunt. I just heard from him via email a couple of days ago. He'd seen my history website on the web. Telford Oliver, chief announcer was Tom Robertson. His secretary was Mary Ashley, who must have read, maybe two books a day. You'd see stacks of books on her desk because she had nothing else to do. So after Prince Rupert, I came back down to Vancouver. All in all, I was a staff announcer for 5 years and absolutely loved my best broadcasting experience. I left only because I had decided to get into writing. My first book came out in 73, I think it was, and it was a guidebook to Vancouver. Did really well, went into a second printing. And more my writing ambitions began to eat into my broadcasting, except that in both cases, jobs were few and far between. I would take occasional gigs. I worked for so-called Globe. VU, CKBU, Daryl Duke, Norman Klenman. I started out as a reporter on their main news program. I became a producer, and then in one of the real miscalculations of my broadcasting career, I became a executive producer, and I was terrible at it. I stunk the joint out, and they eventually fired me. The only time I've ever been fired from a broadcast job, yeah. Oh, and I forgot that I was at CTV, or as they called it then, VCTV, and I was there for probably about 3 years, and I was doing late-night news and all sorts of things. I enjoyed it there. The news director was Cameron Bell. The producer of the segments that I was on was Al Clapp, who was a kind of mad, demented genius. Ron Morier, long gone now. And I have to tell you a story about my days at BCTV. I had walked into the Royal Bank at Broadway in Cambie to see if I could get a small check cashed. I walked up to the teller and she said, "You're Chuck Davis." And I said, "Yes, I am." She said, "I watched those little Serendipity shows you do on Channel 8. This was a thing where I went up with a cameraman and we just winged it. Just grabbed whatever we could. Get four or five items and stick them into a package about 7 minutes long." And she described some of them, and I'm standing there basking in this. It's quite wonderful. And then she says, "What can I do for you?" And I said, "Well, I want to cash a small check, $20. I have an account at the Royal at Broadway and Commercial." She said, "Do you have any ID?"
You spent some time at CFUN, CHQM for one day, it says, and yeah. CKWX.
The CFUN thing, I just filled in for somebody on a talk show. I maybe did two or three shows, that's all. That was kind of fun, but nothing I really wanted to get into. I'm not a talk show host. The CHQM story is actually kind of funny. I forget whether they approached me or I approached them. Do you know Morris Foisey? Morris was the program director at the time. Let's say hired me, I'm not sure. And I was between gigs, so I eagerly took this. Well, it happens that a few weeks previous, maybe two or three weeks previous, I'd written an article, a long article, about radio in Vancouver. What I did was to take 8 tape recorders, there were 8 stations in the town at the time, and I recorded each station from 7 to 9 in the morning and 4 to 6 in the afternoon, the peak listening periods. Then I sat down and listened to all 32 hours, and I marked down the length of time they spent on news and sports, some cases religious religious broadcasts, music, etc., sent it into the Sun. They had a feature called Page 6, and I never heard anything from them. Well, along comes the CHQM job. Morris says to me, we'll see you in here on Monday. So I come in on Monday to do the news, did the news, and while I was doing the news, the Sun came out with a copy of my article about all the radio stations, and I was not kind to CHQM.
So that's why the job ended so quickly.
I think I said something like, music to go to the 18th floor on, or something like. Morris says to me, Chuck, we no longer require your services, but if you tell people how it happened, we'll deny it. Well, it's some years later now, so I think I can tell this story.
I think you're safe. So that's your radio and TV career. Czech TV in Victoria, CBUT in Vancouver, Chan TV in Vancouver, CKVU in Vancouver. You did them all. All of the ones.
That's probably common in this business. You see a lot of people who have worked at 8 or 9 stations. That's quite common. I don't want to do radio anymore. Well, for one thing, I think out of it, and my style is wrong for today's radio. While I was doing it, I enjoyed it.
But you've been a very prolific author or editor of 15 books on local history, including the one that I brought today because I'm going to have you autograph it for me. I've been looking for that book for a couple of years, and that's Top Dog, with Hal Davis.
Yeah, the history of CKNW. John Plewell, who was the station's promotion director, approached me. The book came out in, is it 94?
I believe it's 94.
Yeah. To celebrate the 50th anniversary of the sign-on in 44. And John said, Chuck, we're thinking of doing a book to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the station. I get up on my tippy toes and I say, yes, John? And he says, don't worry, you're the guy. So that was great. And I can honestly say I loved doing that book. I interviewed more than 100 people. I never worked for CKNW except for doing some Expo 86 copy when Expo was on. And I got a chance to meet, some of them I'd already met, but Brian Forrest, John McKittrick, Warren Barker, Shirley Stalker, Gary Bannerman. Gary Bannerman told me an interesting story once about the technical guy. Here's a thing you'll like, Mike. You may know this guy, Jack Gordon. Jack was extraordinarily good. He was a really sharp cookie. He had decided that he was going to see what he could do to improve the quality of the technical quality of CKNW's talk shows. He sat behind Gary Bannerman for a week, very carefully watching as Bannerman went through his thing, filing a piece of paper, pulling out a cartridge, answering a phone, all that kind of stuff. And then he redesigned the console. Bannerman said it was extraordinary, just completely different. It was so much more easier. The ergonomics.
And probably one of the first human engineering things that was actually done to customize the board to the way you actually work.
Yeah.
Because every other one came out of the factory cookie cutter, and, you know, the microphone was there, and the turntables were there, and this and that.
Gordon also did another really sharp thing. When Hurricane Frida hit, I've forgotten what year it was, he had arranged some kind of little generator to take over the station if the power should fail. And it turned out that, thanks to Hurricane Frida, the power did fail. But this little generator kicked in. I don't know what the coverage was, but probably at least the lower mainland. With the result that during Hurricane Frida, CKNW was the only radio station on the air north of Portland, Oregon.
The author sort of took over from broadcasting. We've also already talked about that. Can you remember your favorite incident in your broadcasting career? What's the highlight for you while you were doing radio or television?
Probably hosting the Chuck Davis Show on CBC Radio. This is a story. CBC used to be a little more hidebound than they are now, and they had a show on all across the country, different hosts in the different cities, called 2 Hours Before 6, a typically brilliant CBC title. So it was on the air from 4 to 6. Here, at the time that I was with, no, it was after my 5 years as a staff announcer, I wandered through the station. I used to do this every now and again just to say hi to people, and I walked by the office of producer John Edwards, and John said, Chuck, I want to talk to you. So I went in, I sat down, and by the way, you know how you read that if you go for a job interview, you should look spiffy? Well, I was wearing paint-spattered pants and a dirty T-shirt. John says to me, we've got this show 2 hours before 6, hosted by Stan Peters, and we need someone to do drop-ins. Would you be interested? And I said, yes, I would. So I started doing drop-ins, and for non-radio people, that just simply means I went out and did interviews or features, and they would drop them into the show. I did this for quite a while, was enjoying it, and then John told me one day, listen, Stan is kind of bored with this show, and he wants to leave. Would you mind taking over as host? And I said, I would love to. So he did. Stan left, and I took over as host. And it was carrying on as 2 hours before six. Usual thing. We had a syndicated, not syndicated, it was a CBC thing. I've forgotten what it's called now, but it had been going for 100 years. And then John brought in a new producer, a guy named Kim Whale. Kim is now over in Victoria. He runs book retail service out of his home. It's a mostly net-based. Kim took over this show, and after about a week or so of it, he said, you know something? This show sucks. Let's kick it around a bit. We're going to call it the Chuck Davis Show. It'll just be interviews, because he knew I was interested in everything and everybody, and it'll be you doing an interview, then a piece of music, another interview, etc. And I said, well, that's great, but the brass will never go for it. And he said something, I can't repeat it, but the second word is them. So what happened was that overnight, he switched it. It's now called the Chuck Davis Show. He brought in a guy to do the music, John Runge, an absolute, oh God, I just loved that guy. We just hit it off immediately. And John found this wonderful stuff, this music in between the interviews. So we carried on like this for a while, and the front office was screaming. They were shouting at Kim, you can't do this, blah, 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 blah. Well, then the election came up, provincial election, in which Dave Barrett was the NDP candidate. Kim and I went to see Dave, and we said, would you do us a favor? If you get elected, would you come on the next day? Not while he's premier, premier-elect. Would you come on the next day on our show and do the whole 2 hours? And he said, sure. So Kim and I sat down, and for the better part of a week, we just worked at every question we could think of and then put them in the order of relevance. Finally, the day came, and I think out of maybe 50 questions, we got through 10, because Barrett is very good at this stuff. The show ended. He said thanks and left. The next day, the headline in the province, Barrett says, I've even forgotten what the subject was, but in the first paragraph it said, speaking on CBC Radio's The Chuck Davis Show, Premier-elect Dave Barrett said, etc. Kim took this newspaper page and went down to the end office, where all the brass were, and tacked it up on the board. So that was his way of saying, we made a change and it's working. And by the way, while I did that show, which was 3 years, I interviewed 2,800 people. At one point, for only maybe a quarter hour or somewhere, outrated CKNW, which was an absolute, I mean, even just, you know, that tiny little thing. That was an accomplishment.
Favorite people?
In radio?
In radio. Oh, in television? And television, radio, TV.
Oh, good question.
Who did you enjoy working with the most?
Kim Whale and John Runge, certainly. Kim was extraordinarily intelligent. John was just a beautiful guy with that music. Oh, and then when I was working at CBC Television in the newsroom, I was talking with Norm Broman one day. We used to come around every now and again. He'd go out for lunch. One day he says to me, Chuck, have you ever asked Edna out? This girl, Edna Schmidt, worked in the newsroom. And I said, no, I haven't. He says, do so. So I did. I asked her out. In August, we'll celebrate our 45th wedding anniversary.
Congratulations.
So that's one of my favorite people. Who else? Let's see.
Norm Groman, you mentioned, of course, is a longtime friend. But
never actually worked with Norm.
No.
Oh, gosh. Well, if I go through the radio, Stan LaVere, who was the morning man at CJKL, he was in the washroom one day while the show was on, and he was late getting back, and you could hear the... He comes on, he says, oh, sorry I'm late. I was in the bathroom looking at the mirror and I couldn't tear myself away. The guy was really sharp.
The fun has gone out of radio, though. I think it sort of left in the late 90s when it became corporate.
My hunch is, and I don't know because I haven't worked in radio for a long time, but my hunch is that it's still maybe a little fun at the small stations, if the unaffiliated, if there are any.
I think there's about five.
Yeah. What's that company, the NW thing?
Chorus.
Chorus. It's all been chorusized.
Everything's run from Toronto for all of them. Do you listen to any radio anymore at all?
No. In the car, I'll listen to CBC sometimes. At home, never. And the reason for that is that if the radio's on, I can't not listen. And I'm supposed to be writing, so I can't be distracted. I don't miss it. Watch a fair amount of television at night, but radio, never.
Some of your favorite TV programs, are they documentaries or movies? Or
yeah.
What you like?
In fact, you know, they say that sometimes when people are polled for their favorite TV shows, a lot of documentaries show up, never actually get watched. We actually watch them. Nature, History Detectives, a ton of them. Really miss Da Vinci's Inquest and Da Vinci City Hall. Loved those shows. They're gone now.
Well, they were basically locally based shows and were well researched and well done.
Yeah. the thing that made them work was that they didn't look like Canadian shows. There are shows that looked Canadian. I can't even put my finger on what the hell it is, but as soon as you look at it, you think, that's Canadian. Our daughter, Stephanie, spots it right away. She can watch 30 seconds and she'll say, oh, this is a Canadian show. So I know what she means, and I, as I say, I can't put my finger on it, but it's there. Wonderland, Da Vinci shows. I just saw one the other day called Flashpoint, and it had a nice, slick American feel to it. What I liked about Da Vinci's Inquest was that it was well done, as you say, smooth, but it looked real.
Slick.
Slick Canadian, let's
slick
call it.
Slick Canadian, good.
I must tell you a story, speaking of drama. One of my writing accomplishments was a 60-minute radio drama, science fiction. The producer, this is when I was a staff announcer, the producer, Gerald Newman, I had sent him a couple of things, and he said, well, the writing is good, I don't like the stories, would you be interested in doing a science fiction story? And I said, you bet, because I liked science fiction. So I went to the library and started poking around, seeing what would spark my interest, and I came across a little-known phenomenon now called Bode's Law, which has to do with the distance of the planets from the sun. And I thought, I can build a story around that, so I did. And I submitted it, and he accepted it. I forget what I got paid. Oh, by the way, the very first piece of writing that I ever got paid for was sold to Daryl Duke. Years before I worked for CKVU, I got $300. I was just absolutely, this is what I was up in Prince Rupert. I was just absolutely thrilled. Then he got into trouble with Parliament for some series he was doing, and they scrubbed it, and my script never made it to air. But anyway, this drama, which was called 2.8, which is the number of astronomical units between Earth and the planetoid asteroid Ceres, was aired during the summer. I think it was called Summer Theater. We had a little Volkswagen at the time, and I took my dad and Edna, my wife, out to Stanley Park to listen to this. I wanted to get away from phone calls or whatever, and just really savor this experience. So the show starts, we're sitting in the park, maybe within 5 minutes I'm thinking to myself, this is a turkey, this is really bad. And I wrote it, and at one point I turned around to say something to my dad, who was sitting in the back seat, and he was reading a newspaper. Well, what I did with the story was to change it completely, turn it into a novel for young readers, and my daughter is going through it now, and she's going to fix it up. She's actually rewriting. She's, her creation of characters is much better than mine. My characters lie there flat on the page. When she writes, you can see them. You can hear them.
You've been doing research for writing for a long time, long before the internet came along. I guess libraries, newspaper archives, yep, all of that sort of stuff. It's all legwork and eye work and pulling book. Has the internet made your research any easier?
Oh my, yes. Oh yeah. It's marvelous. I'm not technically minded, and I have problems sometimes with the system. And if I run into problems, I have to phone Stephanie, my daughter. Usually what I hear is, oh, Dad, I've told you this 1,000 times, and I just can't remember this stuff. But in terms of a source of information, it's just absolutely unbeatable.
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I grew up basically when television wasn't even around. We got our first TV in 1953 to see the coronation.
Yeah.
And before that, it was the big radio in the living room where you listened to Amos and Andy and all of those radio shows,
yeah,
dramas, the news.
Remember Lum and Abner?
Yes. Every night we would be in there after dinner listening to radio shows both from the States and from Canada, because at that time we were living in Kingston.
Yeah.
But the internet has been a game changer, especially for research.
I wanted to find out on what day the first traffic light went in Vancouver. So I went to the net and I thought, somebody's probably got this somewhere. And it turns out there's a website started by a guy on the history of traffic lights in Vancouver. That weird niche. And there it was. I thought, that's exactly why this thing is so good. You get a nut like that, and his work appeals to a nut like me, who loves this kind of minutia. So I was able to put in the date, etc., etc. Curiously enough, I phoned the guy later, maybe to ask him a question or to tell him how grateful I was, and he says, Chuck, I got that out of your book, The Great Vancouver. I'd completely forgotten it was in there already.
Chuck Davis, this has been delightful. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Mike.